legislative research assistant at the Miotech Corporation and a Master's of Public Health candidate at the University of Virginia. And one of Miotech's main projects is working on the National Cancer Institute's State Cancer Legislative Database, we abbreviated as SCLID. And this study reflects the results of some SCLID data. I'd like to acknowledge the work of my colleagues on this presentation from Miotech, Jill Freudenwald and Carrie Lowry, as well as the project officer, the program coordinator of SCLID, Regina Ella Cruley, who worked on this project as well. And so we're going to be discussing HPV vaccine and state efforts to reduce cervical cancer. Hopefully by the end of this presentation, you'll be able to identify states with laws relating to cervical cancer prevention and the HPV vaccine along these three areas: laws requiring third-party insurers to provide coverage for cervical cancer screening, HPV screening, and the HPV vaccine itself, laws addressing HPV vaccination requirements when states are actually requiring people to go out and get vaccinated, and laws about educating the public, especially parents and students, about HPV and its connection to cervical cancer. We'll start out talking about the background of HPV and its relationship to cervical cancer, as well as putting it in the context of American Cancer Society cervical cancer screening guidelines. And then we'll discuss the data sources and methods used. We'll talk about a little bit about the trends of cervical cancer and HPV-related legislation over time, and then get into those states that require third-party reimbursement for cervical cancer screening, HPV screening, and HPV vaccine itself. We'll talk a little bit about what states are doing to educate about HPV and vaccination and cervical cancer awareness as well. And then we'll talk about what laws have been considered in the past year, at least have been what bills have been introduced about HPV-related efforts and how they're increasing the awareness of the vaccine, and then talk about what it all means. So cervical cancer is a costly cancer. It costs approximately $1.7 billion annually for treatment, and that's something that states need to consider. It's also a deadly cancer. Approximately 11,000 new cases of cervical cancer were diagnosed in 2007, this past year, and of those, 3,600 women did die from cervical cancer. As Eric discussed, HPV can lead to genital cancers. It's been connected to it, the most prominent of which is cervical cancer, and approximately 20 million Americans have HPV currently. And in this past year, approximately 6.2 million new cases were diagnosed in the United States. What happens is when a woman contracts her HPV, it can stimulate abnormal cell growth. And that abnormal cell growth can, in some women, if their immune system does not appropriately take care of it, it can lead to precancerous lesions, which can then lead to cancer. On June 8th of 2006, the Food and Drug Administration approved the HPV vaccine Gardasil. Gardasil was developed to vaccinate against four types of HPV. Of those four, two of them account for 70% of cervical cancer. And the vaccine was approved for use in females between the ages of 9 and 26. And the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices recommended its use for girls between the ages of 11 and 12. That's because it's found to be most effective so far in girls before they've had sexual encounters and exposed to the virus itself. So the American Cancer Society, these are their most current screening guidelines. These change very frequently, but as of 2007, the annual screening is recommended to begin 3 years after intercourse or no later than 21 years of age. At-risk women of all ages should be screened annually, and at-risk women is generally defined as women who have had a positive Pap test before, which indicates the presence of precancerous or cancerous cells. After the age of 30, women can reduce their screening for their use of the Pap test to every 2 to 3 years after three normal Pap tests in a row. Also, the American Cancer Society recommends that you can use the test for HPV itself, the presence of the virus, in conjunction with a Pap test and reduce your screening to every 2 years. At-risk women should continue to receive annual screening. Over 70 years of age, women after three normal Pap tests in a row and a 10-year history of no abnormal test results may stop screening. However, those at-risk women should continue to be screened annually. And finally, women who have had a total hysterectomy may stop screening unless that surgery was in treatment for cervical cancer or precancer. And these guidelines don't reflect some of the results of a very, very current study that just came out, a clinical trial of 10,000 women that found that the HPV test was actually more effective than the Pap test in detecting the presence of cervical cancer or precancerous cells in 40% of the cases. So we should see these guidelines change slightly in the next year. As I said before, our data source was the National Cancer Institute State Cancer Legislative Database Program, and these data reflect laws enacted as of this past quarter, September 30th of 2007. We used qualitative content analysis of the laws to identify those related to cervical cancer and HPV, and one limitation of SCLID is that it reflects legislation. It doesn't reflect attorneys general's opinions, executive orders, or administrative regulations. This illustrates the trends of cervical cancer and HPV-related laws over time. You can see in the gray, those are the instances of legislation related to cervical cancer. Those aren't individual states. Those are state laws that have been passed. So the data is not mutually exclusive. One state could have passed more than one in each year. And you see in the red, those are laws related to HPV specifically. All the way back in 1987, Massachusetts passed the first cervical cancer-related law, and that was a requirement for third-party insurers to reimburse for Pap tests or cervical cancer screening. In 2003, you see this introduction of HPV-related legislation, and that was because it's related to studies that found the connection between HPV and cervical cancer, as well as the Food and Drug Administration approval of HPV testing as part of cervical cancer detection. And then you see this slight jump in 2005 in cervical cancer-related legislation, and then a big jump in 2006 and 2007 about HPV-related legislation. And you'll note that in 2006, the FDA approved that use of the HPV vaccine. This map reflects laws relating to third-party reimbursement for cervical cancer screening, HPV screening, and the HPV vaccine. So these are states that require their third-party insurers to provide coverage for these things. The red triangle states indicate states that require certain insurers to provide coverage for cervical cancer screening. Those are 26 states, and that's for a Pap test, traditional Pap test. The brown triangle states indicate states that require certain insurers to provide coverage for HPV screening. That's the HPV test that's usually done in conjunction with a Pap test. And those are 7 states. And then you see there are 4 states with the peach triangles. And the peach triangles indicate specific insurers that are required to provide coverage for HPV vaccination itself, where they are required to provide coverage for the vaccine. And I'd like to note here that the vaccine is a costly vaccine. It costs approximately $300 for each dose, and the recommended dose is 3 administrations of the vaccine over the course of a year. So it's costly, and that's something that needs to be considered when states are making this kind of legislation. So state-sponsored HPV vaccination is where the state is actively going out and in some way requiring or providing the vaccine for certain segments of the population. There are 3 states that do this currently. Colorado's Department of Health can pay the administrative costs, the cost of administering the vaccine, to local public health agencies that offer the vaccine to underinsured females entering 6th grade. And you'll see I've noted the legislative code sections up there. These are all enacted into law, but Illinois and South Dakota have not yet, their laws have not been codified. That Colorado law is slightly different from the Illinois law, which requires that it's Department of Public Health provide the HPV vaccine to eligible individuals who request that vaccination. And eligible individuals are defined as women under 18 who are state residents and who lack insurance coverage for the vaccine. Again, it's a costly vaccine, so that's something to consider. And that vaccine is provided at no cost to those uninsured females. And finally, South Dakota's Department of Health may offer the human papillomavirus vaccine to females between the ages of 11 and 18 that are considered eligible for the vaccine. Some states have laws addressing HPV vaccination requirements in schools. For example, Washington, D.C. will require at the beginning of the 2009 school year to request that parents provide schools with their decision to vaccinate or not to vaccinate. They are allowed to opt out of vaccination for any kind of personal reason, religious reasons, if they don't believe in their religious beliefs, disagree with the vaccine, or if it presents a medical challenge to the child. That's slightly different from the Indiana law, which requests that parents of sixth grade girls notify schools of their decision to vaccinate or not to vaccinate, but that law does include an option to opt out of informing the school itself, so they don't have to go and inform the school. And it explicitly prohibits preventing non-vaccinated students from attending school, which is very similar to this Texas law, which also prohibits requiring HPV vaccination as a condition of attending school. And finally, Virginia went ahead and added the HPV vaccine to its vaccination schedule, and so that's part of the general vaccines that students are to receive before they attend a school. Those are female students, before entering sixth grade, must receive those three doses of the vaccine in the beginning of the 2008 school year. And that law includes opt-out options for parents if it conflicts with their religious beliefs, if it endangers the child medically, or for other personal reasons. So how are states informing or increasing the awareness of the connection between cervical cancer and HPV? There are three types of awareness legislation that's out there. And the first at the top, you see in the gray, is the cervical cancer-specific legislation, and the red is the HPV-specific legislation. And those, are instances of legislation. The data are not mutually exclusive because one state could pass more than one law. The top one is state resolutions. Those don't carry the force of law. Those are just things like establishing a Cervical Cancer Awareness Day or a Cervical Cancer Awareness Month, something to kind of get the word out there to the public. The second are the establishment of task forces. And task forces generally are, the Department of Health creates a task force of professionals that are aware of the conditions and ask them to do some research about the needs of the state-specific population and their needs about cervical cancer and the lack of awareness of cervical cancer and HPV. And finally, at the bottom, you see awareness campaign legislation. That's generally connected to an awareness day of some kind. It's somehow getting the word out about cervical cancer and the threat of HPV. HPV legislation that addresses HPV education is slightly different. It's a little more active, if that makes sense. It's the states actually going out and requiring some sort of active education of the public. And you see that it's specific to certain segments of the population. The blue triangle states require professional education of providers on HPV. For example, the Hawaii law requires that providers are educated about the connection between HPV and cervical cancer, with the understanding that they will then go out and inform their patients of the connection and the risk. The brown triangle states are states that require the education of parents and guardians, and you see those are 9 states. It's the highest number of states with this kind of HPV-related legislation. And it requires informing parents about the connection and the risk of HPV so that they can then decide whether or not to vaccinate their children. The pink triangle states indicate the education of students on HPV, and that's generally folded into the health curriculum that exists in the school system. And finally, the red triangle states are states that require public education on HPV. That's slightly different from awareness campaigns in that it generally requires some sort of publication. For example, the New Jersey law requires the Department of Health publish a pamphlet about HPV and its connection to cervical cancer and distribute that pamphlet to local health departments so that they can then inform the public. So what states considered HPV legislation this year, and what were the themes there? 42 states considered HPV-related bills in 2007. Not all of these went into law. They were just bills that were introduced. And there were some common themes among them. Many of them addressed the financial burden of the vaccine and trying to find a way to pay for this costly vaccine in a variety of ways. For example, California considered a bill that required insurance coverage for the vaccine, which is similar to what we've seen in those other states on that map about third-party reimbursement. Iowa considered a bill that included appropriations for monies that would be dedicated to vaccine and education efforts for particular segments of the population. And finally, Colorado considered a bill that would provide coverage to low-income females for the vaccine. There's also this theme of taking the public's temperature. Especially the HPV vaccine requirements as a condition of coming to school is a very contentious public law. And so Massachusetts considered hosting public hearings about adding HPV vaccine to its school vaccination schedule, trying to get a feel for what the public feels about it and whether or not they think it would be a fair law to enact. there is a continued theme of targeted awareness in HPV-related legislation, and that's generally toward parents and guardians of children so that they can have a bigger awareness of the connection between HPV and cervical cancer. And finally, many of these bills included the use of these opt-out options where parents can opt out of vaccinating their children for religious or financial considerations. So what does it all mean? We've seen that state cancer and HPV-related legislation has increased over time, and that increase has correlated with the spikes in with the 2003 FDA approval of HPV testing, as well as the research results that have come out about the connection between HPV and cervical cancer. And it's also correlated to the 2006 FDA approval of the HPV vaccine itself. So we can expect to see a continued increase in this related legislation as the research continues to get out there. We've seen that cervical cancer legislation, it has a more general feel. It's general public awareness with public education campaigns about the disease itself. And then there are those nearly half the states, those 26 states, that require third-party reimbursement for pap smears, the cervical cancer screening. The HPV vaccine, however, it has more targeted awareness in public education efforts. It's targeted to parents and guardians. And we've seen that states are approaching it along a continuum. At one end, you have a very kind of passive approach where it's increasing awareness of the vaccine or encouraging a task force to do research about the vaccine. And then on the other end of the continuum, you have an approach that adds the vaccine to school vaccination schedules and things like that. They're a little more active, or actually going out and providing somehow coverage or providing underinsured females the vaccine itself, which is a little more active than an awareness effort. We've seen that they've continued to include these opt-out options for parents and guardians that may feel some conflict about vaccinating their children for more religious, medical, or those very important financial obligations. I think we can continue to see HPV-related legislation over time, and I think that states will find out how their public needs fit along that continuum so they can best address the needs of their population. They will respond to the research that's out there and see the best way that they can wield this new technology to help their own population and their relationship with cervical cancer. If you have any questions, you're more than free to contact me. There's my contact information. There's also the contact information of the director of the SCLIB program, Regina. And you're welcome to ask me questions if you'd like at the end of the session or now. Go ahead. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That was my understanding. From what I saw that it was approximately $300 for each dose. I'm not familiar with a lower amount of money. I am aware there's some cost incorporated into the storage of the vaccine. Apparently, I'm not a immunologist, so I don't know much about it, but apparently it's very costly to store, and so that might be part of those administrative costs that go along with it. All right, thanks.